Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Easter. Today on Movie Bomb, we are going to review the film Supernova. Came out in 2020, starring Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth. And yeah, I watched it. It's a short movie, about an hour, 35 minutes, considered a drama slash romance. And yeah, so I did. I watched it some of Friday and some of Saturday. And Susan, this was your selection. So I'll let you kind of kick it off and talk to us about your film.
So this is a story about two gentlemen who are married. And one of them is suffering from early onset dementia. And it's about their trip to, I don't want to like spoil it yet, but it's about a road trip they take to visit the one guy's family and their journey together and how it eventually resolves with the one person who's suffering from it having very specific wishes on how he wants to resolve the situation. So,
right.
So, and I will just say, this film is not for everybody. It's not like action packed. It's all like very low key. It doesn't move quickly. Mm-hmm. You have to have a little patience. The acting is phenomenal. The cinematography is beautiful. Mm. So what did you guys think? Discuss.
Yes, of course. Of course. That's all we're here. Yep. Steven, go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree with you, Susan, that the cinematography is fantastic. And there are some specific moments in the acting that I just realize, you know, great actors doing a fantastic job. And those moments hit home. Beautiful. So they're traveling through the English countryside.
Yeah, it looks like the Cotswolds, like the Lake District, right?
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Just roads. And like, I found myself early on when they're following the camper van, that the camera's following the camper van, I found myself going, how did they get that shot? Like,
yeah,
right, yeah,
they're sort of above, and like, are they following this in another vehicle? And like, how did they get this shot? And then there's another one where it's on a road, sort of down below them to below the camera to the right. And you're seeing it through the trees, and I'm just like, how, like, are we filming now with drones? Like, how are we getting this shot?
Because I think it was drones, I do, because
some of the shots were so, so pretty, just really well put together,
yeah,
right.
It is slow to get moving and slow to, I found it odd that they never really call dementia by its name. Do you know what I mean? Like it took forever to actually have a conversation. We know what's going on.
Did they give it a name ever?
I don't think they did.
No, they kept calling it this thing.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
But I feel like a lot of people do that if you're in that situation. It's like if you name it, you give it like power or something, you know, right.
Right. But so I can understand Sam and Tusker not talking about that. But when Sam's talking with his sister and those guys, I thought that it would be a more outward conversation about whatever he's going through. The film is very much about feeling. You know, the feeling and the fear and love and stuff like that. So it lives in that space. And to your point, Susan, if you prefer an action film or whatever else, this definitely isn't the film for you.
Totally.
But it's a very good movie.
You know what I thought? I thought you have to love movies to love this movie.
Yeah.
You have to love movies. You have to be able to appreciate almost anything you watch and find some good in it. And I'll explain what I mean. In my example is I could not take my eye off Stanley Tucci. I thought he captivated me throughout the film. And I want to talk a lot more about him today because he deserves his due. But Stanley, his expressions, even when Sam was talking, when he had to defer to him to do something for him, like, you know, why don't we let Sam do that? Just that look of embarrassment and pain and torture that he was going through, you could see it. And I was watching those facial expressions. And I don't think the pedestrian movie watcher watch stuff like that. You know, the way they wipe their mouth or touch their eyebrow. That is all by design. That is not a mistake or an accident.
There's a moment where Tusker and Sam are having the, you know, the important conversation about what their plans are. Mm-hmm. And right. Stanley Tucci starts to crack. Like he starts to, he starts to tear up and he's going to break down. And it's a moment for that. Mm-hmm. And you see it. And then he just shakes it off and then gathers his poise again and so that he can continue the conversation. And that to me was, I mean, that's as good as acting gets.
Right. Because the people who are sick, people who are terminally ill, sometimes they think I have to be strong for the ones I'm going to leave behind.
Right.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I thought, so this is what he was expressing without ever saying it, and he never had to say it, but you knew what he was doing. He was being strong. And like, you know, when they were at the party and someone goes, he never stops, does he? Like he was always having a good time, always laughing, smiling. And I just thought that Tusker was just like, I'm going to be strong for the people around me. And because I don't want to be remembered as a sick person.
Right.
I want to be remembered.
Right. He says that in the film. I don't want to be remembered for what I'm about to become.
Yeah, and I see a lot of people battling cancer that does that. I've seen people with MS, you know, do the same thing. Like, don't pity me. I'm okay.
So, and battling cancer and terminal diseases, that is one thing. And it's one thing that's awful in its way because it's, you know, tearing down, you know, a person way before their time.
Mm-hmm.
I think with dementia and with... also, you know, with you know, mental diseases, when you're losing your capacity, your capability for memory and just losing all of that, it's a little bit different because you, I remember my grandfather saying at one point, he said, I'm coming into my second childhood, which I thought was an amazing way to explain that. But that you lose who you are in a different way. Like physically you're fine. You're walking around, you can do these things, but you're just not there mentally. And that's a hard thing for the people who love you because you could live for 20 years like that.
Mm. Yes, you know? Absolutely. Especially with modern medicine.
Yep.
So I thought about the, I don't even want to call it suicide plan, but the suicide or the euthanasia, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. What I thought about is I was thinking of all of the diseases that I could have. That would be the one that would make me want to off myself. Yeah. I mean, people live with the pain.
Absolutely. Right?
People live with the pain of cancer. People fight through other terminally diseases. People fight through heart failure and strokes and have 3 and 4 double bypasses, triple bypasses. They just want to live. Whereas in dementia, it's just like you said, it's just like, I am becoming worthless to myself. And why do we live anyway? The older we get, the more important our memories are. And mm-hmm. if you lose that, particularly mm-hmm. if you're a parent and you've watched your kids grow up, I love the movie Still Alice with Julianne Moore.
Mm-hmm. That was great too.
Right, because she had it early, like she was only in her 40s, and she was like, I can't be this young with dementia, right? And just to watch your kids go to college, get married, have children, and then you start to forget who they are, just take me. I can't do this. And it gets worse, you know?
And there are moments of lucidity in it too, where suddenly you snap back and you're aware, like my grandfather had it, and you know, it creates, to keep it light, there were moments where we all laugh because he's talking about odd things and stuff like that. And there are sad moments, but then the saddest moments would be you'd have like a 5 minute period of lucidity where all he's doing is apologizing.
Right.
You know, I'm so sorry. I don't know, like, I don't know where I go. I don't know. And it just is remember watching my dad with his dad and just how crushing those moments are. You know? Yes,
absolutely. You know, Tusker said to Sam, remember the conversation we had when this first started? And I thought he remembered that. So that must have been something that was really deep, deep down in that he won't forget. He might forget everything after that, and he probably don't remember the details of that conversation, but he do remember saying, remember what we agreed to, or remember what we said when we first started this. And I was like, that's pretty interesting that, you know, that wasn't a mistake. I don't think that was a flaw in the film.
Right.
Right? Because you said there was some lucidity in there. So that might be something that he remembers.
And this was early onset. Like, it's not that bad. He has flashes where he goes and he's gone. But when, you know, 80% of the time, say, he's fine. And he can remember all of the things that he can remember.
Right.
It's just what happens is suddenly the scales turn where you go from 20% bad and 80% good to slowly that the scales change where suddenly the 80-20 is the other way around.
And
it's no memory.
Yeah.
And it's crushing. You know,
You guys were talking about the pace of the film, you know, that it took a little while to get going. And I felt the exact opposite. I felt that it was one pace throughout and I was okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Susan, you do a lot of editing when you're, do you listen to music when you edit?
I do, or I like have some like YouTube, like news thing on or something like that. Yeah.
So the reason I ask that question is because sometimes I listen to classical music a lot when I'm doing work. I just want background music. And then there's sometimes you can listen to like a down tempo, long 1 hour, you know, stretch of music. And that's what I thought this movie was. It was a steady pace. I don't think it had a crescendo or anything like that. I just thought, this is a story. Someone's telling me a story. I'm along for the ride. And I don't care if it's taking a little while, because in my mind, I knew it was only an hour and 30 minutes.
So right. Okay.
Every now and then I would pause and go, okay, there's only 40 minutes left. Let me go get a drink, whatever. And then I came back. But the pace to me never changed. And I just thought that, okay, I'm okay with this. I'm following it. You know, I was reading some reviews and there was a lot of people who felt it was so boring or because they were waiting for something to happen. Well, I was like, ladies and gentlemen, it's happening. Like, you don't have to wait for something to happen because you're in the midst of it. It's happening. There's nothing dramatic. No one's going to jump out of a closet, you know.
Right. They're not going to have flashbacks to when they were younger.
Right. Like, there's no big reveal. Like, you know, there's no big reveal here. It's the story is happening. So enjoy that. And that's what I did. So, like, you know, for me, I just thought it was a story. Someone's telling me a story. And the writer was Harry McQueen was his name. And I just thought he wrote a very melodic poetry type story. And I was good with that. I was really good with that. It was shot in the Lake District, like you said, Cumbria, England. I've been to England, but I've never been to that part. I thought those roads were crazy. So
I've been there and it is beautiful. And
so explain those roads to me. Is there one going in and one going out? Because there was no room for other cars to pass.
It's just like that. You know, there are roads like that. And yeah. I think the road that in particular that you're talking to was the campground, at least, right? Where they were on that one road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess if another car's coming, you have to pull off to the side.
Yeah, you do.
And there are other places, Chris. So I've been to, my wife's grandmother used to live on the Isle of Man. There are places where they've got berms where your mirrors, your rear view mirrors can like are actually touching the grass on either side. So you can't pull off.
Wow.
So if a car was coming the other way, someone's got to back up to the last spot that you could get, you know, pull over.
Right. Right.
To then let the other car through so that you can both go.
That's pretty, because I get confused even in New York when you go through those small bridges and the cars have to stop and let each other through. So I can imagine doing a 6 mile road, you know, like that just kind of
it's not like their car is going back and forth all day long though.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, it was definitely beautifully shot. So yeah, there were some reviews. Some people thought it was boring and I just like, you know what? you're just not into it.
Not right. The right movie for you.
Not the right movie for you. One thing I want to discuss now is the appropriation of gay culture. Okay. Gays had the right to be upset about it, and many were, that two quote unquote straight men. And here's the thing, we don't know if Colin and Stanley are straight. We don't know their backgrounds. I don't know if they're
They're straight, right? Yeah. Well,
a lot of people in the gay culture will like, oh, you couldn't find two gay actors to play this role.
But here's the thing, like, and I've heard people talk about this like for years, because, you know, do you remember Rupert Everett?
I don't know that
actor name. Rupert Everett. He's gay, and he was playing a lot of like great leads. He was in Shakespeare in Love as Kit Marlowe.
Okay.
He was playing a lot of great parts, and then he came out, and then he got pigeonholed as the gay man. And he's like, I'm an actor. I want to act. So like, I feel like, can we just let people do what they do? Why does
it have to be
labeled like, you're the gay actor, you're the black actor, you're the, you know, like.
Well, here's the funny part though. So many black actors in Hollywood are so pissed that so many British black actors are taking their roles. I've seen story upon story about that. In fact, I think Samuel Jackson feels very strongly about it. Uh-huh. That all of the great roles that are coming out today in your black acts, you'd be like, ah, another black Brit. Like, there's so many. And it's like, there's not enough American black actors for these roles. And well, you're not as trained as some of these guys are.
Well, that's how I feel about it. Like, yeah. You know, there's a lot of actors out there, but how many of them really act?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them really act?
So in The Devil Wears Prada, Stanley Tucci played a gay man.
Yep.
But he also...
We don't know that.
He could have just been flamboyant, right?
Right, exactly.
But he was also a model. I did not know. He was a runway model in his career. Mm-hmm. That was one of the reasons that he was selected for that film as well. Because he knew the landscape. Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, he did that early in his career.
The point about gay actors being upset. So what are we going to say? Well, why didn't we have us? I get it. But how about we just pick the two best people?
Right. That's how I feel about it.
If you know, pick just, great just, actors, it doesn't matter.
So we can do the job.
Right, exactly.
I watched Judas and the Black Messiah.
Uh-huh.
What an amazing film. You guys need to watch it. It's about Black Panther, Fred Hampton, the chairman.
Right.
In Ohio, I think he was, or I forgot which state he was in. But anyway, Daniel Kaluuya, British black actor, played as Fred Hampton. And I'm sure there was a lot of black actors who was like, not only is this American culture, but this is Black Panther. This is our role. You know what I mean?
Right.
The guy won a Golden Globe for it. That's how amazing he was playing Fred Hampton.
So get better at what you do.
Get better. You know, I'm sure the casting guy didn't go, I want Daniel Kaluuya and I'm sold on him and he's going to do it. I'm sure he screen tested for it. And the guy was like, okay, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, like, I absolutely agree, you know.
Yeah.
NBA players aren't saying, why are there so many Europeans coming into the NBA? Like, couldn't we find an American player to play that? No, it's the best person for the... You know, this guy can hammer a 25 footer, you know, he goes 2 for 3 compared to you, you know?
Right.
You know, why? Like, just be better at what you do.
And I know, and I'm very, you know, I always say that the people that might complain the most about discrimination want to discriminate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I believe that.
I think in certain times you used to say, you know, well, this role should be gays only. This role should be blacks only. Every culture does it. Indian people go, why is a white man playing as an Indian person or, you know, or a Saudi or an Arab or something like that? Or Hispanics say, why is a white lady playing a Puerto Rican maid? I could do that, you know? So I think everyone is just kind of feeling left out. But that's not the case. Like you said, they picked these two great actors. And we also don't know the relationship between Stanley Tucci and Colin and the writer. He may go, hey, I got a perfect role for you guys.
Right.
And I want to see if you can do it. Did you know that they switched roles?
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah. Yep.
So Colin Firth was going to be the one who...
Colin Firth was going to be Tusker, and Stu Tucci was going to be Sam. And then Colin goes, after reading some of the script, he's like, I think we should switch roles.
Yeah.
And then not only that, they were saying, it's something about your Britishness that would make you the better person on this.
Right.
So here's my question, though. Had they switched roles, would they still be visiting family in England? Or would they be visiting, would they be visiting Stanley's family in America?
Well, so they had come across the pond. Tusker had come across a pond 20 years ago or something was part of the story. So what I'm wondering, though, if they say, I think we should switch roles, I can see a scenario where Tusker, the American, would be bringing Sam, if Sam were the one who had dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever, where he'd be bringing him to see his family and the people that, do you know what I mean? Like,
why are we assuming that they can't do different accents?
Right. I'm sure. Yeah. I
don't know. I've never seen Colin do an English accent.
American?
American English accent, U.S.
No, but I guess my point is that I can imagine a scenario where, like, if it were to happen to me, if I were the one who was losing my capabilities, where my wife would take me to see my family, okay, and would talk with my family about the struggle and everything else. And we've seen movies like that. I can't think of one off the top of my head. We've seen movies that have, you know, have that, where they're talking about the person who's sick. Yeah. With their family, and they're all tight, you know. So I could see that either way.
I thought the guest at the party,
yeah,
I thought they were good. I thought the family was great actors.
Yep.
And it felt real to me. It felt like I almost felt like I was visiting a family and having dinner with them.
Right. Yes, agree.
Right. Totally. There was nothing over the top about the conversations.
Right.
The husband with the white beard. You know, Stanley said, you know, you're going to take care of him, right? He's like, pretty much, I got you. You know, I just thought those conversations were tender.
They're all believable moments.
Yeah. When the wife said, did you talk to him about it yet? He was like, no. So let me ask you a question, because I might have missed this. Did he pretty much tell everyone else his plans except for Sam?
I don't know. I think the sister probably knew. Mm-hmm. That's what, like, I don't know. I don't think it was like that crystal clear, you know. But
I think when Tusker asks Clive, you know, are you gonna take care of him? I think the assumption there is, you know, 5 years from now, once I pass away, are you gonna take care of him? Not, I don't think they were in on the plan. That's my point.
No, that's the feeling I got. I didn't feel like there was anything, but I did feel like maybe the sister knew.
Yeah.
No.
I want to read something that Colin and Harry and Stanley talked about. It said, we sat down and started talking about the script and where we'd be shooting. And then Colin said, Stanley, I think maybe we should switch roles. Remembers Tucci, who initially bought the film to Firth after meeting with McQueen. I said, I've been thinking the same thing, and I don't know why, I just felt it. So we both, you know, we read both ways for Harry, and I could tell Harry was panicked when we bought it to him, and it was evident. It was an amazing process. They thought that to me, and we decided to do an audition. So basically, they were like, I don't know why we're thinking this way. It just feels right. Or it feels like a different movie if we switch roles. And which one's going to play better? So yep. that's very interesting on how people can switch roles in a film. Because we've seen that a lot, where this person was supposed to play this person was supposed to play the other person, and the director went like, you know, you would be a better Mary than a Susan, you know?
Right.
And so it just ultimately...
Well, it's like when we were talking about Dangerous Liaisons, and Michelle Pfeiffer was supposed to be the Glenn Close role, like...
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God,
no,
right?
No.
Right. So overall, like I said, for me, I gave the movie about a 6. I'm not horrible. It wasn't, but that doesn't mean it was a bad 6. It means that I know that everyone's not going to like it. I know that its pacing was hard for some people, but if you could just enjoy a story, I have elderly people in my family. Steve, you talked about elderly people in your family. And sometimes they just sit down and go, let me tell you something. They tell you a story. And yeah.
Right. And you're like, where are you going with this?
Where are you going with this?
Where are you going with this?
But sometimes you go, wow.
Yeah.
Right. This theory is that, you know, I heard a story from my brother who was telling me a little bit about my mother, because my brother is 8 years older than me. So he was around before I was born. And he was telling me stories about my mother and her past relationship. And I was just like, wow, that's cinematic right there, you know?
I used to go walk the dog. These are memories that are so near and dear to me. My grandfather and great-grandfather would go visit them up in Wisconsin, and the two of them would take the dogs for a walk, and I'd go with them. And just like you're saying, Chris, they just told stories. They told stories about World War One. Mm-hmm. They told stories about, you know, jobs that they had done, or how they changed this, or you know, that used to be this, and then they came in, and it just it's not a specific story, but it's a wonderful walk.
Yes.
You know,
it just, and hopefully if you get someone to act out those stories, they're as good as Stanley and Colin. Right.
Well, I would say that this movie was like that. It's a walk with two people who care about each other, and you're just walking along watching them make their way through a difficult part in life.
Exactly.
You know? Right.
So I did want to take, you know, our last moments. I want to talk about Stanley Tucci. You said last week that he was always the bridesmaid, never the bride, right?
Yeah.
This guy is always playing second, third, fourth cast character in films, and he crushes it.
Every time. Right?
He crushes it every time. And I was thinking about his IMDb filmography. If you didn't know who he was, you would say, who's this guy? Like, look at these movies and TV shows that he's done. I have no
all interest over the map.
All over the map. I was looking at some stuff that he did do that I actually want to go back and watch, because I want to see his performance in them. So he was in... here's another thing I want you to pay attention to as I talk about these films. The leading roles that was ahead of him. And like, wow, like he's played with some powerful people. His film debut was Prizzi's Honor with Jack Nicholson and Kathleen Turner. Jack Nicholson's not, you know what I mean?
Right.
So if you're in a lot of these actors that I'm mentioning, they pretty much take over the room.
Yep. Right?
They suck the life out of the room.
But not with him.
But not with him, right.
He just won't let himself be overpowered by that.
He won't. So he was in Woody Allen's Deconstructing Harry, and that had 9 or 10 A-listers. I mean, Billy Crystal. I mean, it was just so many people in there that he could kind of get lost in it. There was Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks and Paul Newman. Come on. Really? You know, did you see that movie, Road to Perdition?
Yeah.
I have not, actually. Yeah.
Yes.
It was Tom Hanks, Paul Newman, Jude Law, and Daniel Craig, and Stanley Tucci. Right?
I think he played the assassin in that, right? Was he the assassin in that?
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
I can't remember either.
He was an assassin.
He was also in Pelican Brief, right?
Yeah, he was an assassin in Pelican Brief.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I'll say. He doesn't always steal the show. He always does a spectacular job. But he can play within a role and be perfect for that role, but not like sometimes there are you know, supporting actors who steal the show.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He can steal the show, but he can also just be perfect for what was needed in that moment. I think he's just a spectacular actor.
And it's funny you said that, because I'm looking at these movies that I'm thinking, oh my God, yeah, he was in that. Or I forgot he was in that. So he was in The Terminal with Tom Hanks and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And if you remember The Terminal, that was castless. Like, there was hardly any people in that movie.
Right.
But that was almost...
He was the uptight, like, security guy who wanted he wanted this guy out of his hair.
Because we know that Tom Hanks can play a two-hour movie by himself. We saw that in Castaway.
Right.
So in The Terminal, it was just a guy stuck in an airport. Same thing.
Yep.
And then, so Stanley Tucci was in that. We all know that he was in The Devil Wears Prada. And I think that was the movie that gave him global acclaim, because it was almost like a pop movie.
Right.
Everyone saw it. But he was with Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and I think the two of them together were that movie is not a movie that naturally I'd be like, oh, I'm so looking forward to this. But with those two in it, it's so good.
It's so good. He was in Julia and Julia, about Julia Childs.
Yep.
With Meryl Streep and Amy Adams.
Yep.
Another two that's powerful. He was in Easy A. That was Emma Stone's first popular movie. But that had Patricia Clarkson and Thomas Hayden Church in it. Okay. Of course, he did stuff like Captain America. Did you guys ever see Margin Call with Kevin Spacey?
No, I have not.
It was worth a watch.
It's been a long time.
It was about one company's debacle during the Wall Street collapse. So it was almost like if the cameras were in Lehman Brothers or something like that, and watch what's going on in this one company. It shows that 24-hour period for that company. Right. Very, very good film. We talk about The Big Short. Well, this was another story about the same thing. It was really, really good. Of course, he was in the Hunger Games series.
He was in
one, right? He was in one of my favorite films, Spotlight.
Yep.
What is that one?
That's about the Spotlight. Boston Globe uncovering the priest.
I haven't watched that.
Susan, I swear, do it. You must watch. Outstanding roles: Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, Rachel McAdams, Liev Schreiber, and Stanley Tucci.
But I forget what role Tucci played in that, though.
I can't remember. That's what I'm saying. There are some movies I'm saying, and I'm like, oh my God, like he was in that. Right. But I'm thinking back to Spotlight. I've watched Spotlight a few times. The first time I watched it alone. And I told Donna, who's, you know, from a Catholic family, and we had gotten into a discussion about priests and stuff like that, the priest. And she was like, I said, you know what? You need to watch Spotlight. And she did. And she was like, at the end, her mouth would just open like, I cannot believe this film.
Right.
To me, Spotlight didn't have an ending, because the things they were talking about, the scripts, like the text they were showing, you just leave going, this is never going to end. It's going to last forever.
Yeah.
This one Boston Globe story, Susan, uncovered child abuse across the globe.
Yeah, and like I find that so disturbing and so awful. I don't know that I can sit down and watch that. I really, like, honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's uncovering. It's the reporters and the work that they're doing to get it done. So you're not, like, it's awful, but you're not.
You're not seeing anything
tied up in the act.
In the
reporting and the investigation to get to what they needed to get to.
Yeah, it won a lot of awards, and I thought Mark Ruffalo's amazing. I want to watch
him. He's a really good actor too.
He's so good. He did a movie about the water contamination.
Yeah.
Where was that? What state was that in? It wasn't Flint, Michigan. It was somewhere else.
No, yeah, it was like in like New York, Massachusetts, something like that. Like it's not.
But he's a very intense actor. He's very active on social media, and the great thing I like about Mark Ruffalo is, intense as he is in his roles, he's just as intense in real life.
Gotcha.
And I read his tweets, and I just like, this guy's over the top.
Have you guys, so on Stanley Tucci, have you guys watched his CNN show that's on like
Sunday? I haven't. I'm waiting till I can watch it, like binge watch.
Me too.
Like, I'm not very patient with like, okay, episode's over. See you next week. Like,
I think Tucci'd be a great guy to hang out. Like, it'd be great to do like a day with him on his thing, on his food tour of Italy. I just think that he'd be funny and charming and really great to hang out.
I love the guy. I absolutely love the guy. I love the guy that I know. It's so funny because I listened to a podcast. I told you, Talking Sopranos.
Right.
And it's, did you guys watch The Sopranos, Susan? Did you watch it? Was that a series that you...
No, that was not my thing at that point.
Yeah, it's kind of violent for some. But my point was, is that the two podcasters, they're talking about actors that they've met in real life. And either they were either a prick, asshole, or they were like...
Or
I thought they would be an asshole and they turned out to be really, a really great person. And Stanley Tucci is just from his movie persona. I just want to hang out with the guy because I love the way he embraced Anne Hathaway in The Devil Wear Prada.
Right.
Like he made her feel comfortable and she was taking all this shit from Meryl Streep and he was like, hang in there, kid. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I just thought I could see him, if I was to go to Hollywood trying to get a role, he putting his arm on my shoulder and go like, you're doing great, man. Just keep it up. You know what I mean? He would seem like that kind of
he
guy.
He seems warm.
Exactly. And that's in every role he plays, even when he's an assassin. Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I got. Believe it or not, this was a quick, almost hour that we've been talking. I didn't know if we were going to get that much out of it, but I think my final synopsis is a good movie. It could even be watched as background noise if you're working.
I couldn't watch that as background. There's too much like nuance.
Well, let me tell you why I said that. I'm not talking about the first watch. I'm saying if you were to just turn it on and put it, because it was a lot of dialogue, and we always talk about movies with dialogue. I could definitely listen. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, you know. But fine.
I thought there were a lot of quiet moments too.
That's true. So, oh yeah.
You know,
actually dozed off during one. I had to wake back up and rewind.
I got. Yeah, I thought this was a good movie. I'd probably give it a 6.5. Like for a movie, the quality of the acting, the quality of the cinematography, all that is way at the top of the scale. I think that it's a little bit boring, but just because it's a little slow. It's so good though. The acting and the story and what's there is fantastic. So I'd probably give it a 6.5, wanting to give it more.
Yeah.
But knowing, like, not wanting to mislead a lot of people, because I think that a lot of people won't like it because of how slow it is.
Yeah. Susan?
I kind of agree with you about, like, most people don't have the patience to sit through this.
Yeah.
But and I think that's because our attention span has been ruined by media and cable, and like everything's instantaneous and fast and let's blow stuff up and like all of that drama, drama, drama. Like we can't appreciate anymore just the quietness of it.
And this movie had that.
Right. It
had soft, quiet moments. Even in the dialogue, it had soft and quiet moments. One of my favorite scenes, by the way, we didn't really talk about this, is when he's talking with the niece.
Yes, the me too. I love that.
It was like
I love that.
4 or 5 minutes that I just was, you know, that's a moment that just really sucked me into the character. You know, Tucci's character.
Stanley Tucci has some great comedic lines. And one that stands out to me was when he was asking the waitress, would she like his autograph?
Oh, yes. He goes, okay.
When did you become this man? Why do you even do this? I don't know. He just goes, half the time it cracks me up, blah, blah, blah. He goes, I don't even know why I do it. He goes, then why do you do it? He goes, it's the other half. I just thought that was hilarious. I laughed out loud. Like, half the time, I don't even know why I do it. Then why do you do it? It's the other half. That was a great line. And when he's another part when he's talking about how he's the roads are beautiful. This is a beautiful trip. I love the navigation. Do you mind navigating in gear 5 a little bit?
explore the outer regions.
Explore the outer regions of the fifth gear. I thought so good stuff in that.
Well, he kept calling the nav system the Iron Lady. It sounds like Margaret Thatcher.
I wanted to mention that because after he said that and she was talking, that's all I can envision was Margaret Thatcher. I was like, it does sound like Margaret Thatcher.
And yeah, that was hilarious.
It's funny because I thought of Meryl Streep playing as the Iron Lady.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. role, because she sounded yep. just like it. Mm-hmm. That's so funny.
Yep.
Or like Gillian Anderson in The Crown, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's so all I thought for me, like the most, like the saddest part was when Sam finds the book.
Oh, yeah.
And like he starts like the writing is fine in the beginning and then it's just like scribbles at the end and you're just like, oh no.
Yeah, yes. And that's why I would definitely that's why I would be thinking of ending things.
right. And we could have like an hour long discussion about that, right? Like better to make that decision than yourself, you know?
It's and it is awful. And people like I've had multiple grandparents who've gone through dementia, and I remember my grandfather was he was an engineer, really smart guy, so on and so forth. And we thought things were going on. And finally, like my aunt went and talked to his doctor and they had a conversation. Like she maybe took him to a doctor's appointment. And basically the doctor's like, he's wicked smart, you know? And he said, cause he's using tools and different, he's figured out ways to not give up to others what he's forgetting. Like he's using little things that, and he's like, and he's playing that game on me. He's fooled me a bunch of times where I'm thinking he's totally fine and he's not, you know, but he's smart enough to realize things are going on and to compensate in different ways, which think how sad that is, you know? I mean, but think how sad that you're aware enough that you're forgetting things that you figure out tools and tricks to fake it.
You know, I'm going to ask.
I think that's pretty common. I think a lot of people do that. Yeah.
I'm going to ask a stupid question. It could be. It's a stupid question / comment. Dementia, Alzheimer's. Is there a difference?
There is a difference, and I don't know what the difference is.
I agree with you, Susan. I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
Or is Alzheimer's a brand of dementia? Is it a certain type of
I would say it is a brand of dementia.
I think so.
Okay, because Alzheimer's,
because there's like that Lewy body dementia from like if you have Parkinson's you get Lewy body and
okay. Yeah. That's the first question. The next question is, I don't see a lot of dementia / Alzheimer's in the Black culture. Or I understand it's genetic. Is that correct?
Some of it is, yeah. And I think some of it could be like, you know, like if you drink a lot, like, what does that do?
So, yeah, there are things, you know, mini strokes could cause dementia. Different things can cause the issue. And then there are other pieces to it. Like my grandmother, hers started with aphasia. So aphasia is you start losing words. And Tusker had a moment with that where he's like, you know, the shape, he couldn't identify the word triangle, right?
Yeah.
My grandmother, I remember her one time saying, you know, out there where the dog runs around, the backyard? Yeah. Like they forget super common words.
Yeah.
They just sort of, they're gone and they can't pull them back in.
It's funny. I don't know why genetically I haven't seen it in the Black culture with senior citizens. I don't know any friends or family who, like you said, grandmother, grandfather, people have suffered from it. I've seen places that do caretaking. Most of the citizens that are in there are white. I don't know why that is. And I would like to know more about the genetics of it and, you know, how. And I also understand, and I think I learned this from Still Alice, that she was worried that her kids were going to have it because it was in her, you know, she had it.
Right.
Someone else may have had it, and I'm worried that my children may get it. So
there's a difference between early onset. As we all get older,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're going to have issues. And so the grandparents that it happened to generally were over 90 years old. Do you know what I mean? So that's where, you know, where that mental capacity started to make a precipitous decline.
Yeah, I think it really sucks when you're still a productive citizen, you're 50s, 60s, and you're still working and trying to function. You got things to do pretty much, you know, you're not just sitting in the room. It has to be the worst. Yep. Cool. That's all I got, guys. This was a great conversation. I
learned. Like and subscribe.
Yes.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. It's my turn to pick a movie next. I got a couple of options. I think I'm going to go back a few years.
All right.
Maybe the 90s, early 2000s, and select a film. Because Susan, I'm going to ask you this. So Steve and I, we both watched the documentary, The Last Blockbuster. It was incredible. And since I worked at Blockbuster and Steve owned the video store, we're going to do a podcast on it. If you want to jump in, great. Otherwise, we're just going to do that.
You guys do that because,
Yeah, that's all right. I thought you would feel that way anyway. But Steven, did you like it?
I loved it.
I loved it.
What I loved about it was it made me nostalgic for what arguably is the best job I ever had.
There you go. Me too. Same thing. See,
I used to love Friday night going to Blockbuster.
That's what the movie's about, Susan. They talk about that all the time. It was
so great, right? Yeah. What are we going to get? That's why
I asked. Out of respect, I didn't want you to feel left out, but me and Steven, we got goosebumps watching this film. Yeah. And I was like, we're going to watch this. So. All right, guys, that's it for me. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Movie Bomb Podcast, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
Okie dokie. Bye.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.